So our session on exploring resistance is actually going to be a little bit ad hoc, but I don't think that matters. I think the work we do when we just think for things for ourselves and pertaining exclusively to autogenics is a good way forward. Having said that, I have looked up in the dictionary a resist a bit of a definition about resist. Withstanding the action or effect of something, to repel, to refuse to comply with. And I think, yes, that brings out the smiles, doesn't it?
It sounds like the opposite of Anne's R words. Yes. Anti-R words.
Yeah. Well, no, Anne's R words, though, you mean. Yes, the ones we were talking about. Yes, the opposite. Yes, and these are, yes, other. You're quite right. These are our words. Oh my goodness, the language is wonderful, isn't it? These are our words. And they are not our words. Wow, I love this. But of course, in psychotherapy and in psychological work, people always talk about resistance. And I did stumble on quite a nice website, which I don't think is, you know, if you do go and have a look up Linda Buchanan, and this was in 2020, and she writes copiously and she does training all about resistance and all sorts of things. And I was thinking, not an awful lot of this is relevant to autogenics. But I also thought if you had a read of it, I should have sent it to you before, but I only discovered it myself Thursday night. So I've been flying by the seat of my pants over the last couple of days. So we could just start by thinking about resistance. What do we already know about resistance in the therapeutic world? What is going on? And what goes on, or is likely to go on, or unlikely to go on in our world, in the autogenics? And we can just bash around a few ideas, because I don't want to ram anybody's head with theories and shoulds and shouldn'ts. And
Well,
Connor, please butt in.
the first thing that came to my mind, Jane, was about autogenics and what would happen with a client resisting their process.
Okay.
Does that then become their process?
Aha. Oh, that's an interesting one. I was just going to ask you. Of course, it depends what their process is, and well, it depends on a lot of things.
But you know, the minute there's a
Yes.
discharge or something occurring
Yeah.
due to fear of going out of their comfort zone, fear of the unknown, whatever it might be, that they resist that arising.
That's fair enough. I can think of a story. Yes. But of course, it bounces back straight away onto us. Because if we recognize something as part of an autogenic process and actually it's part of, et cetera, it's our job to say, this is the stuff that's happening. This is fun. But I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Well, you may never have to do it again. You may have just done it. Or if it comes again, you'll know what it is. It'll be familiar and that'll be all right. And so, you know, there are lots of sort of palliative language that we can use that can help people not be afraid of it. I'm going to tell a story, and then meanwhile, Donna, you might have thought of some more ideas while I think when we very first met, and I don't know what the context was, unless it was about assessment, but I assessed somebody, and so stop me if I go into too much detail. A man of 70, he hadn't slept since he was a child. I mean, he had sleep problems from a very, very young age. And as we went through he'd done all the sleep doctor stuff and the CBT for insomnia, and nothing had helped. And so he'd come along to us. And in getting to the end of our questionnaire about being brought up and the family and what was going on around that, he said he was Irish, that he had been brought up in a very strict Catholic upbringing. He was the second child. Second son, second child, can't remember. and he was sent off to a religious seminary to be trained as a Catholic priest from the age of 7. So I said, what was that like? That's quite devastating, isn't it? He said, yes, well, of course, I didn't have my family anymore. And I said, well, of course, we do hear stories, awful things that go on in those sorts kind of places. He said, yes. And he started to cry a bit and he became a bit tearful and said, I don't want to talk about it. So I said, that's fine. I don't have to talk about it either. All I will do is ask you one or two questions. If you want to say yes or no, that's all we need to do. Okay. So I said, so in that setting then, are we talking about if there was any kind of difficult stuff that you had to learn to live with, are we talking of abuse? And he said, yes. And I said, is that the sort of worst kind of abuse we can all think of? And he said, yes. And I said, I'm beginning to understand that that might be at night. Would it have been at night times? Oh, yes, he said. So I got my own picture there. And then I could say to him, well, this is actually where your stress response might well have started very carefully looking after you. Because if you were going to bed as a young 7-year-old with all of that difficulty preying on your mind, and your awareness, oh, now I've gone to bed, oh, now I don't know what's going to happen, who's coming, who's going to take me, what's going to happen, then of course, it's right and proper that the anxiety should have been right up at its top of its scale, trying to take care of you so you can run away or fight. But of course you couldn't, could you? You were only 7. So it's not surprising that actually what you were left with was with the fear of going to sleep. And he was a bit upset. Only a bit, though. He was sort of controlled and everything else. I said, do you think that's what was going on for you? And he said, yes. And no one's ever said that before. I said, well, I will say I don't know if I'm right, because I can't. But of course, we've got enough clues, haven't we, with what the questions I've asked and so on, to suggest that this is right. So I said, I have no idea what's going to happen in your autogenic process. We won't be wiping this out just all of a sudden and the switch will have changed. I don't know what the process is going to be, but we can only start and know that autogenic training is all about quietening down that stress response. At the moment, it's working at full tilt many, many years after it needed to be. So we hopefully will change that habit. So he went away and he was keen to start his autogenics. And when he started his autogenics, he was in a group. Of course, we had no other conversation about that. And then, and he was absolutely diligent with his practice, absolutely wonderful. And nothing particularly was going on, but he enjoyed the practice. And I think this is lovely because the brain was giving it the right way around. It wasn't bringing up all the old stress and trauma and all of that right at the start. No, it was educating this guy who had never really had a very calm, peaceful existence to have that. And it was about five or six weeks into the course. He said, well, I'm having some nasty dreams. I don't like them and so on. So this was the beginning of some resistance, which didn't last long. So what's going on? And he said, well, the dreams are so horrible. I won't talk about them, but I don't want them. I said, I'm going to be a bit mean here, because of course we know that you're here because you can't sleep properly, and of course the sad bit about having dreams is that even if they're ones you don't like, of course the good news is that you are actually asleep, so that's got to be a good sign. And he said, yes, all right then. But I don't like these dreams. So I just asked him one question: are they connected with the conversation we had earlier before this course started? And he said yes. And I said, well, I think these dreams actually have come at a good time, because this is not real for you anymore. Whatever those troubles were, they were in the past. And so all that the dream is doing is just releasing something, it's moving something through. Oh, but I don't want them. I don't want those dreams. And so I said, well, that's why you've not been sleeping for all these years. I'm going to say to you that your body's probably been trying to have these dreams for some considerable time so that it could help you to heal itself. But of course, you couldn't understand that. You wouldn't have known what that was about, and you were still locked into this stress response. So I think autogenics is really, really doing its good work here. So rather than resisting the dreams, I knew I'd used that word, let's acknowledge that these are short-lived. They're not going to be with you forever because they're doing a specific job. Once that job is done, you won't have them anymore. So I think that given that you've lived through them for this last night or couple of nights you've been having them, you might not ever have them again. You might have already done the job. Or if there are a few more, it won't be so bad. And you'll know what it's about and that actually that good work is carrying on. And you can guess the answer. Of course, he carried on. The only way that he didn't want the dreams, of course, was to stop doing AT, which he wasn't going to do. And that never came into the conversation. But he took on board what I was saying. So I think my message on that one, by the way, he ended the course sleeping like a baby and so grateful. It was just unbelievable. Of course, I haven't forgotten his story. It was very, and so quick. And he'd been everywhere, to therapy here, everywhere else. I got to this. And I think his autogenic process started actually at the assessment that was quite revelatory to him, an understanding. And an understanding is the key to so much also. Right. So when the resistance came, it was short-lived because we could put it into a context that was tolerable. And once you have something tolerable, then and people understand, then, hey, they're going to be fine. And indeed he was. So that was short-lived resistance. What about you, Donna, in your work with AT, encountering resistance?
I was just thinking with the people that really, really resist and won't let go, they don't continue.
Because you're quite right.
You can't. There's always a yeah, but. Yeah, but if I do that, this will happen. But yeah, but and you can't ever find an answer. So there are some that we just have to think, well, I've done my best. Yes. And you have to let go.
Yeah.
Because what I was hearing when you were telling that story, Jane, was that he really wanted to do AT.
Yes, exactly. Yes. yes, it's not pure resistance.
Yeah. So yeah. People that really are resisting it, I think you have to sort of show them, do you want to resist this more than you want it over?
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
And see if you can get them on board that way. But if some people are just, it's almost a personality trait, isn't it? But yeah, I've tried that, it doesn't work. Yeah, I've tried that, it doesn't work. But what they're doing is not actually doing what they're saying they're doing, because they go home and they want you to do it for them,
mm-hmm.
or for it to work once a week, mm-hmm. an hour a week while they're with you and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it can be tricky.
Yes, it can.
For people that are really, really resistant, you do have the ones that just say, no, this isn't really for me. I don't want to face it.
And you're talking, of course, about their practice. I mean, this guy was practicing diligently, but they're not doing it. They're simply not doing it. Or in doing it, what kind of things are they reporting? Things like, well, it's not working. No, that's not quite what we're doing here.
Mm.
Or ask them, so if it's not working, what is it that isn't working? And, well, I don't feel any better. I don't feel any different. Nothing's going on. And you're the yes, but person, absolutely. And you're quite right that there's some who decide themselves that they're not going to continue or is it something that they can't face? I mean, we don't know, of course.
Exactly. And our brain, I mean, Bev said it earlier with something, our brain is very clever.
Mm.
It will only give you what you can deal with at the right time.
Mm.
So resistance can be some of that as well, that maybe they're not ready for it. And they don't know about that. And we don't know about that either.
Mm.
Yeah, I have a sense that resistance, and I think you both touched on this, could be a defense mechanism because of fear.
Yes, it could.
Getting out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Fear of having their hopes dashed if they've tried lots of different things to help them with a condition or a problem.
There's also the fear of actually this could work.
Yeah, and how will that change me and my life?
Exactly, because then I won't be me. Yeah. Because I'll be different. Yeah.
And that's likely to be unconscious, isn't it? Because I think when we're just looking at it, oh no, you know, I've got a problem, I want this to be the solution, we're not actually able to think of the parameters around it and ooh, well, if it is successful, what will that be like?
Mm.
Yeah. And of course, there are so many other things going on in people's lives. What about relationships? That if somebody who is really resistant and actually has made such a habit of it that most conversations are fairly resistant conversations, that could be quite, you've got two, maybe possibly two dimensions there, with one person wanting the other one to change very much and the other one being very defensive and saying, well, I don't want her to be bloody right, or him to be bloody right. there are a myriad of things that I don't think we could possibly unpick in any one encounter or in any one client.
Mm.
Having said that, if they find something that they hang something on and want more of it, then they'll do it.
Mm. It comes back again, doesn't it, to listening again to them and seeing if you can pick up something that maybe you can explore and tease apart and help them gently to look at or to see another side of or a way round or something.
Yeah. It's almost like within us, and in psychosynthesis, they talk about subpersonalities or being made up of many parts. And maybe there's a resistant part, and helping people to stand back and be able to give that part the reassurance or, you know, the kick, the push, whatever it might need to help, you know, if there's definitely still a part that's invested in the course, how can those two bits work together for the desired outcome? Maybe.
Yes, Pia.
That's exactly what I work with. I'm a voice dialogue facilitator. So when people come in and they have resistance, it's no problem, because I just say, may I talk to the part in you that's resistance, that's scared of this? They move over and I'm trained in talking to that part. The part always knows why, and it's always a vulnerability that was created in the past. And when they, as an adult and with awareness, they can take care of that inner child that has that fear, it goes away.
Yes.
It's quite remarkable. So, I mean, I'd love voice dialogue because it's so powerful. So
I love the words you used there. I mean, just let's talk about the part of this.
Mm. Yeah.
Let's talk about that other, not talk about it, talk to it. Yes.
Yeah. And they move over and they change. Yeah. I mean, it's a very, very powerful method. Yes. Very powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would always be right.
Yeah, always.
Yes.
I find if we've done some of the offloading exercises and the resistance comes up, it's easier to work with further down the course than it is right at the beginning, because you haven't got much to work with. But if it comes up further down along the course and you've done some things, then I suppose it's a bit similar, Pia, that you can put that part of you in the chair and get angry with it, or you can do something with it. But if we haven't got to that part yet, then you're still in that sort of battle with not the tools to get it out of them.
Yeah.
So I think it is dependent where you are in the course as well.
You're quite right, yes. When we've got more tools, then there's something you can do with them, yeah.
And you know them better as well, obviously. More things have come up. Sorry, Ben.
No. I just suddenly had a thought as well about the client that's resistant to offloading exercises.
Oh, yes. I think that's the commonest.
Is it? Yeah.
I think that a lot of people come along because, of course, we flag up that it's all about relaxation and sitting in a chair and an altered state, and everybody hangs all their hopes and fears on sitting in a chair and doing nothing. And in fact, then when the contradictions come up, that emotions are going to pop up and it interferes with their autogenics. So they try and do it more and more because they want to squash those down. And no, they're not going to, because they keep coming up and that interferes with our autogenics. And so they try again to do it better and to do their exercises properly. And they do everything they possibly can, but not realizing that they are pushing all the stuff down again. And it might be 2-3 weeks, maybe, Donna, with this happening pretty much all the time, and they're not doing any offloading and they're not doing any of that. And of course they've got their own reasons too. I mean, the story I've just told, you know, if anybody had told that small child to go and be angry at a cushion, well, he couldn't have done it, not in the setting that he was in, of course not. So it can become a fear of an awful lot of things, can't it? Just not just the thing in the moment, but going back and back, which nobody's going to unpick. And of course, we are not analysts ourselves. All we can do is help on the client's level, is unpick a few of the things that they've said. And then from that, we can ask them one or two questions. And Donna, you're the counsellor. You're far more experienced at this than me, although I've been working with autogenics for a long time, so who knows? But when we're not here to say, you know, what was your relationship with your father like, because that's not what we do. But when they say something, we can pick it up, of course, help it to move.
I often find it very, very helpful, you know, when I get people and I work with them, and of course it hasn't been with autogenics because I haven't started that yet, but if people are really nervous about what will come up, I always say to them, and it works every time, I say, when whatever you are scared of happened when your brain was not mature. So your way that you experienced that when you were little is very different when you experience it now, because your adult can actually cope with what happened in a totally different way, because the little one was stuck in time, but you're different now. Yes. And it always takes the sting out of out of the person, because they were like, oh, okay, my brain was not developed to understand what was happening. And that always helps them, just take the sting out of it somehow, so they settle a bit more.
And of course, when it was happening all those years ago, it was real, and now it isn't. It's a memory. It's got a different form as well, so you know, it's just presenting itself very differently. Yes. And of course, I'm reminded of your client, whose parents divorced when she was 7, and she was never told. I mean, that, you know, just as you were talking there, just devastating, isn't it? To think what that did to her, quite extraordinary. But the other thing that I say very often at assessment, when these anxieties are voiced, well, actually, because it's autogenic, it will only deal with what it knows you can deal with. So if there's something that is major, 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 it'll come up so subtly, you'll hardly even notice. Mm-hmm. But on some level or another, some little change might occur. So that's one way. Or the other way is, actually, if you don't need to look at it anymore, then there's no need to. And it can stop hanging around in the background. It can actually settle down like the sediment in the bottom of a good bottle of red wine. It can settle down right down in the depths of you and never have to appear again. So that's a little analogy, which is quite an amusing one to think about. And also it does take away some of that anxiety. And Donna, you and I often say, don't we, it's only the stuff that needs addressing.
Absolutely.
That will make itself felt.
Yeah.
May I ask you, do you find that it's very common that every AT client will have resistance at some stage in their program?
I think that's really interesting. I'm going to say, yes, it is very common, but it may never come to a point where it has to be addressed and named resistance and all of that. Sometimes people name their own resistance and they say, I just couldn't get near to doing my exercises. I can't understand why. I've just had a week where everything's happening, blah, 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 chaos, chaos. And I mean, I know that when I think about it, I don't want to do it and I don't know why. So that's when I remind them of short stitch or whatever else it might be. And or otherwise, I mean, maybe you do this too, Don, and just to, well, hey, look, next week is next week. Let's see what happens then. And maybe you are already. That's the other thing. Was it about, is this process, is the very resistance part of the autogenic process? I think you asked that, didn't you, Bev? I think. And maybe it is. And it was like, talking this morning about how many times we do or do not do short stitch. And when we heard more, Pia, of your client's story, that's when I thought, well, no, then perhaps that's quite right that she didn't do too many or whatever it was. And it just her own sense. And we can think, oh, I'm not doing my homework properly. And that's the conscious part. But actually, the other bit is, watch out. Now, look, let's just take care. Let's just go gently with this, which is also the other reason I always use short stitch to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a client in my group, actually, on Friday, who is very diligent. She always does her practice, always 3 times a day. It's like clockwork. And she does her life like that. And then she didn't. She said, I just couldn't do it. So I said, well, maybe this time you needed to not be a good girl or whatever term she had used.
Yes.
And I said, and maybe that's you just being something different.
Yes.
So I think sometimes the resistance is part of the process, definitely. Yeah. And I also had another client who was such a good client, if you like, did everything I said, did the diary, did it 3 times a week, this, that, and the other, didn't resist anything, did the offloading, did everything. And when we got to the end of it, she had engaged with it, but on a very superficial level, because she hadn't, there was that resistance there, but because she didn't engage with it and work through it, she only did the autogenics on a level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was brilliant. It was lovely. But I'm thinking, actually, you didn't really get as much as you could have got from that course. And I still see her now. She still raves about it. But she's never didn't even understand the neutral state. Has never been anywhere near it. And I don't think we'll ever get anywhere near it because there is something stopping her. But until she sort of addresses that, she won't, because it's there stopping her.
Yeah.
But she didn't have any resistance, if you like. So
no.
It was there. And it's under the surface, but she was resistant to looking at it, but never gave me an in to it.
No, so yes, I mean, the only way that you can know that it was there is by that knowledge that she's just on the same level all the way through, and there's no going in there. And there won't be any going in there, and there'll be something maybe down the line when she has a dream or something, literally wakes her up to it, and then she might have some more understanding. It is, we don't have much to work with, really. We do our assessments, and we don't, you know, we're just getting the superficial, but we're getting the story from the client, which is only going to be as much as they want to tell. Whatever's down in the unconscious or whatever, you know, they'll only tell what they know. I would, you would, that's the way it goes. Mm. So I think this is where our wonderful saying comes about autogenics. Autogenic training is the therapy which reaches the parts that other therapies do not reach.
Yeah.
And it's all that unknown. It's that old Heineken ad. Do you remember that? Have we not spoken about that through this training course? You should write it and put it in a beautiful picture and hang it on your wall. Autogenic training is the only therapy which reaches the parts that other therapies do not reach.
Yeah, it's very true.
And in fact, an example of that was extraordinary. Someone had been on this training course years and years ago, and then they'd gone on to train in psychotherapy and other bits and pieces. And I think they even dropped their membership with the BAS, but they came back. And then this person contacted me to ask for some supervision. And I said, yeah, that's fine. We can fix something up. And she said, I've been working with this client for 3 years. And so I just need a bit of guidance because I'm thinking of teaching them AT. And they've been suffering from irritable bowel syndrome for all the time that I've known them. And I was absolutely horrified. I hope you are horrified too. She's been working with psychotherapy. Someone with quite bad irritable bowel syndrome. Clearly it's had no effect at all. And this person is trained to teach AT. I'm somewhere along the line, we've gone horribly wrong with this person because she has not understood anything about the stress response and the flare-ups and how irritable bowel can be. But, you know, it's one of the first things that can sort itself out if you've got several things in one client. I was horrified. And I said, I'm horrified. I was very nearly angry with her. Of course I wasn't, because obviously something had gone wrong somewhere. I was angry, but thinking, what has gone wrong here? This poor chap, he's had all this psychotherapy to no effective use. Well, probably there were other things, of course, that would have come out of it for him. But she said, do you think he would be suitable? But that was the thing I was cross about. Because in fact, anybody is suitable for AT, end of. So with those skills, she could very easily have taught him a long time. So I was, there was some interesting resistance there from the therapist, but I couldn't explain it. I wouldn't have known what was happening there.
Yeah, and that's important to be aware of as well, actually, our resistance, perhaps not in the AT because we do teach it as standard, but I know all through my counselling training, I was always taught that the client can only go where we've been or as far as we've been ourselves, yes, on our journey. And that is very true, because otherwise we're working with somebody and we don't want to look at, I don't know, rape or something, you know, whatever, just pulling it out of the hat. Well, we won't go there. So, and if that's what they've brought, we won't be any good to them because we are resisting it just as much. More so probably than they are.
Yes.
Perhaps not as relevant to AT, obviously, because we are teaching something systematically, but still worth having it in mind, I think. That if we feel
it is, isn't it?
Well, Donna, too. Because if we were very superficial with our AT, I mean, how could we... I think there is something energetic there as well. If I'm superficial with my AT, how can I help another person to go deeper? I just wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
And so that's one thing. But in another, maybe we can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just sort of trying to work this through. Is there on one level or another, if even if we are superficial and avoiding some of our own stuff, we can still appreciate that whatever the client is going through is theirs, and it is, let's call it undefined. Shall we call it uncalled for? I mean, what do I mean? We're not drumming it up. You know, it's spontaneous. It's arriving. Then there's not much choice, is there, but to at least be able to acknowledge and reassure. We don't have to explore it. We don't have to talk about it with them. We have to acknowledge ourselves in that situation and take it to supervision, at least to supervision, so that we are aware enough not to have kind of distorted the client's position. But it actually might be that because autogenic training is so non-analytical on the therapist's part, that actually the client can move forward.
Could be. I don't know.
I mean, well, the story I've just quoted, by the way, I mean, I'm not an Irish man, having been in that situation he was in as a small boy. I can only imagine it and feel for it, but I didn't have it for myself. And therefore, or anything like it. So,
and I think that's where it's so important that we hold space.
Yes, that's it.
Really
isn't it?
Hold space and just allow and really have the container for the person.
Yeah.
And just in love and compassion. Really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think our acceptance of the client's presenting issue helps them to build acceptance internally for themselves.
Yeah, that is absolutely right.
Yeah.
And are we then questioning whether we might not be able to hold that space if it touches too closely on our own? I would hope not. I'm speaking for myself there. Or to know when it's not mine, it's theirs.
Yeah,
it all takes an awful lot of self-awareness, doesn't it? Which our practice of AT should give us.
Yeah,
hopefully. and if we're aware of us, then we know what's ours. Hopefully we could know what's theirs. And we should know about our limitations. If we see something on an assessment form that we think, oh, actually, I don't really want to touch somebody with that irritable bowel.
Yeah.
Then we don't.
Yeah.
I'm sure we all would, but you know what I mean? If there's a specific thing and it flags up, then we've got the choice. Or we think, well, no, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to have regular supervision to help me to deal with it.
Yes.
And then we all grow.
Yeah.
So I think,
again, that comes out of the awareness, though, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's all self-awareness, isn't it, really?
I certainly know in my work, if I have a part that I don't know and that I haven't worked with, I can't access it with another person because I don't know the right question to ask. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
I think it'd have been really interesting for you, Pia, doing AT, because that might actually bring you opportunities to work with such a person without having to know about or worry about, because it's theirs. Because it isn't.
Oh, but it's two different things, two totally different modalities. Totally. I do.
Sorry, I'm not suggesting you work with both. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the more you do with autogenic training might open up the opportunities. Oh, yeah. Just spontaneously for you to realize, oh my goodness, I talked about one of those or whatever it might be. And you realize even after the event. That was really interesting. I didn't touch my own stuff or whatever it might be for you.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I think it's a little bit different. I think it's a little bit different.
Okay, then leave it alone if I've spoken out of turn. Yeah.
Just a different modality.
Mm. Yes, of course it's a different modality, yes. And of course, our own autogenic processing is going on anyway.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah. And I think as well, I know I'm just thinking if I've done it with specific autogenic clients, probably not, because it is a different thing, but I can't see why it wouldn't work. When I've been working with a counselling client, and I've got a bit stuck and I think we're not moving. I'm not quite sure what's going on here. I can do autogenics just to put me in that space, and I would have a different, maybe something might come to me while I'm in my autogenic space, or I would be more centered in the session. So I think that I've definitely done that before, my AT before a session, counseling and autogenics, just to kind of reset me. So that I'm not carrying anything of mine, and that I am open and receptive to whatever's coming from the client and from inspiration, if you like.
Because these things,
ask this question. You're not writing your diary. Does it remind you of schoolwork? I don't know why I just said that. Oh, yes, it does.
Yes.
It, you know, something that you just hadn't thought to ask before. Yes. So that is a good thing for us. It's a good tool for us.
Yes.
Gain a bit more insight as well.
It is. And I think as you were describing there about how autogenic traders go to centre you, maybe it is also helping us with our own neutrality.
Mm. Yes.
Because absolutely. That's what it would boil down to, wouldn't it, in that setting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. On the whole, as long as somebody is engaging with this, and it does start at the assessment, because you've both done one now, you now understand. It's all right. People actually really do appreciate talking on those detailed levels. You need never worry about, you are the professional. You know, you're not a doctor, no, but always the question is, so if this was going on and that was going on, how was that for you? It sounds a very difficult time. And then they can tell their story and you are listening attentively. And all of that is very powerful in developing the therapeutic rapport. So by the time they come for their first session, they are ready to go. They really are. And it's very rare. You know, we talk about resistance, but I think the commonest resistance is to the offloading, as Donna has said. Mm. But to AT itself, people are very, very keen to do it. And then when they're biting their heads off because they haven't been able to, like your client in week one, is that right? Have I remembered that right, Pia? In week one, well, with short stitch, your client, she. I'm sorry, I might be muddling her up with a client of my own from yesterday, so that's fine. But was she finding it difficult?
No.
To do not difficult. No, that's my fault then. Okay. Somebody was very chaotic in my session yesterday. And they were, there was so much going on. And so that was when I said, look, there are times when we can't do it. And it's right that we don't do it. And your own body is right in stopping you doing it, even though your head might be saying, you must. So sometimes that can be the way.
May I ask a question? Let's say that a client is really, really resistant for a whole week and they don't do any practice for a whole week. Do you then just pull, do you carry on like it wasn't and you just give them the next exercise? Or do you, let's say that they didn't do warmth, just to say something.
Yeah.
Do you then do another week with warmth and hope that they will do it? And how does it work?
Yes, I think, it's going to vary. I mean, if you're with a group, you can't spoil it for the whole group and you can't make the group sort of miss anything out, or you can't do it. And you can't. So that's one thing to take into consideration. And the other is at exactly what point it all happened. Now, for example, talking about short stitch in week one, and maybe somebody has hardly gone to it. You know, we do our sessions at the hospital on a Friday. I don't know how often it's happened for you, Donna, but people say, well, I didn't start till Monday, you know, and what on earth is the reason for that? But they didn't, for whatever reason. But never mind, they've done most of the week, that's fine. But then if it's been, for example, let's take up your example of the warmth exercise. That's hugely long, and some people just find that they literally find it very hard to fit it in, and then perhaps there is resistance, whatever. If they've done none at all, that is a great shame, because of course heavy and warm are the two foundation exercises in the whole program, so you wouldn't want to skate it over that whole week. But then you are obviously going to ask them how they got on and what was going on for them, and did they sit down to do it at all? Now, that's a useful question, because sometimes they say, well, actually, I did do it at night. And then that's another dialogue, actually, which says, well, you've told me you haven't done anything at all, and now you are telling me you've done some at night. So, hey, well done. That's great. So that's something else. But maybe they couldn't keep the warmth going because it was too long and they went to sleep instead or whatever. But at least they've done something. So I think to really get into the detail and make sure, are you really saying you have done nothing at all on this new exercise? Yes, I did do last week's a few times, they often say, but I didn't put warm in. So that's when I might well suggest, I think what we will do is have 3 days on the warmth exercise. And maybe if they are, I mean, the situation is going to be different for everybody, but if they can come back and see you in 3 days' time, they've probably done enough warmth to sort of get it going. Or you could move on, but I think actually that's a big one. Okay, let's suggest it was in the cardiac week that they didn't do any practice. And you would have that discussion, and there might be some squeamishness, some uneasiness. We've talked about this, haven't we, with the heartbeat, or with going into the heart. I mean, it's quite strange for a relaxation technique to go inside the body and start examining all these curious organs that we have. So that discussion has already been had, of course, in giving it to them, and then they find they can't practice. Well, the first thing I would always say is, I'm very sad that you didn't email or phone, because I needed to know if you couldn't get on with it. So then you might get more of a story of why they couldn't do it. And actually, in that situation, I'm quite keen on introducing the respiration exercise, even if they've done very little with the heartbeat one, because you could send them back to try again and try again, but maybe it's going to be, you know, not sensible to do that, because they've already had a week of not doing it. You're opening it up for another week of not doing it, which could just make the thing worse. And I feel that heart and lungs work with, are such a good team, that if they've had some resistance to using the cardiac one, actually, hey, let's just move on and let's put the breathing one in there, because that will probably settle everything down. Because heart and lungs, maybe the heart just wanted its partner to work with. So those are some nuances that I've kind of developed in my own practice. I mean, I wouldn't say there's any theoretical knowledge about this particularly. It's kind of feeling your way. What about you, Donna? Have you found that kind of situation?
Yeah, I had one actually yesterday. She hadn't done the heaviness part one all week. She was quite happy with the arms, but she's all, the legs are all very new. And obviously we'd moved on to the neck and shoulders.
Yeah.
So I just said to her, why don't you have a weekend of arms and legs?
Yes.
And then start from Monday and do the neck and shoulders. We're in a group, so I can't.
Yes.
I need to move her on.
Yes. 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 So
that wasn't a choice.
Yeah.
Working privately is different. Maybe you can skip a week and add a week or what have you, but yeah.
Yeah. On the whole, I don't do that. Yeah.
No, because they get used to that and they get used to not doing it, and you're playing around with their resistance. Yeah. So if they know they're on a schedule, then they'll catch up and stick to it, and you're not going to wait for them.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you.
Yes. And having said that, there are times, suppose you are working individually and then they've been ill and they can't come in a certain week, as long as you've left them comfortably with the hold exercise, maybe if it's after warmth, or if they've got to breathing and then they can't come to the solar plexus week, actually it's fine to take a break at breathing, no problem at all. And then, so that you're not waiting for them so much as actually giving them a break because they've been ill and it's good reason. So, yeah. But yes, I mean, these are all the kind of nuances that you can certainly talk about with your supervisor should the case arise. But actually, it's a bit of common sense. What have we got here? We've got to finish by this date because they're going on holiday by then. Or actually, we could wait and we could slip it all on a week and then let them go on holiday and then bring them back for week 9 after their holiday. That would be perfectly all right to have a break after they've got all their regular exercises. So there's quite a lot of things that you can play with. But you chose the key one there, Pia, warm. To miss out all of that would be sad. But yes, of course, the other thing is we've got a week to play with, haven't we? You could say, well, look, do 3 or 4 days. Let's say 3 days, absolutely, and a fourth for choice if you want to, on the warmth, so you get a really good crack at doing that. But what is it that has stopped them? You see, we still haven't addressed that, have we?
Definitely.
So it still might not work. So actually, what another way? Whee! I love the way the brain works. It's only just come to me. But of course, we've got the hold exercise, haven't we? And the hold exercise has got my right arm is heavy trigger. My arms and legs are heavy and warm. That can be repeated, 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 repeated. And then neck and shoulders. And then I'm at peace. So actually, the hold exercise is a good way, without having to go all the way through each limb separately three times in that enormous length, which, and it might have been the enormous length that their own mind was resistant to, and they didn't know that, but that, you know, that something in them knew that a great big long exercise wasn't a good idea for them. And so actually give them the hold exercise and give them that for a whole week.
Good
that
idea.
Will be much more productive, I think, in situation we're discussing. And also you could add, well, look, if you're doing that, then there might be one or two times when you just find yourself doing three rights and three lefts and so on and doing it in the prescribed way and just see what that feels like. Thank you so much for that question, because once we start answering it, actually there are loads of things we can do, and it really depends on the circumstance and what's going on, and kind of a bit of common sense with the parameters of diaries and everything else and groups and things.
That's great. Thank you. Very good.
So getting back to the offloading exercises. Oh, we're supposed to be doing our tutorial. Where are we?
We were doing exploring resistance.
Well, we are. We've just about. We started 15 minutes late, didn't we? Right, yes. But I'm just wondering, I think that in tutorial 3, this question that I was just going to start talking about.
Is in there.
Is in there.
There is some questions there on resistance, I think, or that fall into that category, maybe.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, isn't it? It's not all of them. There are one or two. Well, it isn't. The one I'm thinking of just isn't there. And now I can't even remember what it was that I was thinking of, which is a clear indicator that we've done enough on this now. So, well, how would we sum up, Donna?
With resistance. What do you mean?
Touché.
I think a lot of it is listening to your client. Try and find out what they're resisting first, and then try and find out why, or another way of looking at it. Rephrase it is an easy way sometimes.
Yeah.
Come at it from another angle.
Yeah.
And it might dissolve.
And I was mentioning sometimes there's other things going on in their lives, and such as a relationship, and maybe when we are listening to them and then something comes pouring out that they haven't got time to practice because this is happening and that's happening and so on and so on. So what's the emotion you're picking up from behind there? And is it some anger? And so then we can say, it sounds like you're a bit irritated, a bit stuff's going on for you, is it? And then perhaps more stories come out. And actually, as long as they've got the anger exercise, or you hurriedly give it to them in that session, they've actually got something to work with that, and then they will find they can do their AT. So so listening and our own awareness, that's really what it is, isn't it?
Yeah. And supervision, you've always got supervision.
Very important.
Talk it through.
And also, I'm reminded, Pia, today when you were talking about the client's background and then whatever it was, I can't remember quite what came up. But no, we hadn't heard about the client's background, and we were talking more procedurally about what we were doing with short stitch or whatever it was. And then actually when that came up and I suddenly thought, put myself in her shoes, I think we do that all the time, don't we, when we're hearing stories, that poor 7-year-old, how was she supposed to deal with that? No wonder that high anxiety is present. Of course it is, and so on. And then that makes our practice difficult, and then we don't know. So, hey, we can, Yes, all of it is about listening. And I hadn't heard that bit this morning. Once I'd heard that bit, Ah, that was beginning to make sense for me. Yes.
That's good. Good.
Right. Do we need to do a stand up and a shakeout? You know, I'm in winter clothes today. Actually, the sun's come out outside, but I'm in the cold side of the house. But I was really chilly earlier.
Oh. I would love to, if I could go to the toilet very quickly. Is that
well,
all
no,
right?
We can't possibly allow you to do that, Pierre. No.
I'm holding on. I'll go very quickly.
We're only having a shakeout. You can go to the loo whenever you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm going to do the same, actually, Jane.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a minute.
Fair enough. I went before.
Good girl, sit down. Sit down. What, sit down or you'll go out?
I'm sitting down, Donna, on it.
Get out. Oh, I'm still muted, I'm sorry. He's on the table now. Go on.
Oh.
Well, now, I was the one judging the competition over who was quickest in the loo.
Yeah, who won?
It all depended on at what point you switched on your video, so I can't tell.
It was a draw.
It was a draw. You've all arrived back absolutely beautifully. Okay. Now, look, these tutorials, you know, we talk all the time on this training course, and we are so well versed in what we're doing. I think, and I'm mindful of Pierre, and we can... I'm not trying to say we want to cut corners, not at all. I'm not saying that. But let's try and be as smart as we can running through these things. And of course, everybody will have an interesting question, and then it'll take 5 minutes to answer that. So we're good. So we'll also go with what comes up, of course we will. So, so question one on tutorial three. How do we want to do this? Would you like to just, maybe you've just read them and know what you're reading, or maybe you've got some notes you want to read out, or
do you want to practice doing it?
Do you want to practice doing it? Yes, I indeed shall
introduce it
be your
to
client.
Us.
I don't mind having a go in the deep end.
Yeah, go for it, Ben.
There's another question later for you, Pia, if you want it.
What is this? What are we doing?
The tutorial for today, for this afternoon, is tutorial three, Saturday, July the 1st. And the first question is, how would you introduce the third standard exercise, heartbeat, calm and regular?
Right. Okay.
And Donna and Jane said, do you want to practice doing it? And I thought, what a great idea. Practice makes perfect.
Absolutely.
Practice shows my imperfections. I love that with nothing but loving kindness.
Before you start, I am so